Didn't they last time today?
Today I have a little sniffle and a bit of runny nose as well.
So, how would you give the child God bless Lord Shah? How would you give them? Sneeze, Chana, child God bless Lord Shah.
So, if I sneeze, you have to say God bless you.
Again, the Nalanda traditions in the there, the Sanskrit tradition, Nala, Paja, Tan Do, the Gyu Mongyavanane, Paja, the Do, and the Shijing Do, the Do Zigari.
What I refer to as the Nalanda tradition, which is essentially the Sanskrit Indian Buddhist tradition, there are many scriptures that are part of that tradition, such as sutras and tantras and so on. And among these various classes of scriptures, the most important category are the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras.
And
the Perfection of Wisdom scriptures have as their explicit subject matter the teachings of emptiness, and as their hidden. So of these two key subject matters of the Perfection of Wisdom scriptures, the explicit subject matter of emptiness and the implicit subject matter of the stages of the path and the realizations, it is Nagarjuna's writing that deal primarily and extensively with the first subject matter, the explicit subject matter of emptiness. And it is the works of Maitreya, whether we are to take Maitreya as a human being or whether a Maitreya in the form of a celestial being, whatever it may be the case, but it is the writings of Maitreya that primarily emphasizes the exposition of the concealed or the hidden subject matter of the stages of the path and realizations. And particularly his work entitled Clear Ornament of Clear Realizations, Abhisamaya Alamkara. So it is on the basis, primarily on the basis of Nagarjuna's works and his key work, Fundamental Wisdom of the Middle Way, Mula Madhyamaka Karika, and Maitreya's Ornament of Clear Realizations, Abhisama Alamkara. It is on the basis of a study and understanding and contemplation on these two principal texts that one can develop a very deeper understanding of the teachings of the Four Noble Truths, and particularly the teachings of the Four Noble Truths in relation to the Two Truths, which together constitute the Buddha's understanding of the basic nature of reality, and particularly with the relation to the fruits, which is, as we discussed yesterday, where in the Buddhist sermon, he talked about how sufferings must be recognized, but in fact there is no sufferings to be recognized. Origins must be eliminated, but in fact there are no origins to be eliminated, and so on, which refers to the actual fruit of the path. And here, in Maitreya's Abhisamaya Alankara, Ornament of Clear Realization, when he talks about the fruit of the Mahayana path, he talks about what he calls the three great objectives of the spiritual aspirant. And these he refers to as the great mind, the great abandonment or elimination, and great realization. And when describing in greater detail what these three great objectives are, this is explained in the 8th chapter of Ornament of Clear Realizations, where he explains the entire spectrum of the resultant state of the path in terms of the teachings on the four kayas, the four Buddha bodies, the natural Buddha body, Buddha body of perfect resource, Sambhogakaya, and wisdom, truth body of the Buddha, and emanation body, perfect emanation body. So it is in terms of the embodiment of these four kayas, the attainment of the resultant state is explained. And not only that, but also Maitreya correlates the attainment of these four kayas with the teachings on the 10 bodhisattva levels, 10 levels of the bodhisattva. So when you reflect deeply upon the description and explanation of the four Buddha bodies, and particularly the levels of the path that lead to the attainment of that embodiment of the Buddha bodies, then you will find that it is in the Vajrayana teachings, particularly in the highest yoga tantra teaching on union, where we really find a much clearer explanation of the understanding of the kayas, understanding of the Buddha bodies. So when you combine your, cultivate your understanding of the path and their results on the basis of comparing these key texts and the Vajrayana perspective, you will then come to the realization, yes, I can see a pattern, I can see the actual projected path.
Oh yeah. So that push with the Kushituya, Satin Yindu, Sare Lambda, Dasher Lamsin, Nishin Duma, Tapshini, Din Lam Dini, Tapshi, Lamni would tell a dene, and Devu Korea, Bangotu, Tobotu Sadi, Sosu Tore and Erba, the Round Chukuse, Bangotu, Tobotu, Yeting, Dithane, Gavati. 되게 심지게 쳐도 샌든도 메니 남긴 주베 이두잔에 남긴 터베 걸어야 샌든 배면 흔주 다 두트고지 구요아리 샌든 타이어지 두트고지 구요아 다디 또 숨게 칠릴 때네 구요아리 숨게 칠릴 때네 영어라 이제 꼬지 난 구요아리 이제 인도 샌든 수구 샌데 샌든 수구래 야 낭세 차라 니체 롱주소로 구다 주베 구세니 니체체 다 도세니 Panda Yigi, Kashore, Debu Kuti, Rangdun Chu, Sasta Shandun Su, Sash Nisha, Tinu Jujigi, Tubti, and Yishiru Taw, Senemendu, Sare Lambda, Sonu Taw, Sam, Kashore, Dacha Lam, Donna Changus, and the Tuni Taw, Tinu Digitane,
These two correspond to the two key aspects of the path, the method aspect of the path and the wisdom aspect of the path. Dharmakaya corresponds to the wisdom aspect of the path, and Rupakaya, the form body, corresponds to the method aspect of the path. And also in terms of their content of these actual paths, the skillful means or the form method aspect of the path relate to the world of diversity, the world of differentiation and multiplicity, whereas the wisdom aspect of the path relates to the world of unity, where diversity is brought into a single unity of ultimate nature of reality. And this is because in reality there are two levels of truth, the conventional level of truth and the ultimate level of reality. So this is how there is a correspondence between the basic nature of reality and the path that is cultivated on the basis of the truth, and then the final attainment of the result, which is the outcome of that path. So there is a correspondence or correlation between the basis, the path, and the result. Therefore, we find in Chandrakirti's guide to the supplement to the middle way, entering the middle way, where he compares the union of the path of wisdom and method, which correlates to the two truths, the truth of conventional truth and the ultimate truth. He compares these to the two wings of a bird, an eagle or a bird, that would cruise across the space of reality and then lead to the attainment of full omniscience of the Buddha.
Di thanda di di khonde sunduwa tedar loju zi yinawa sajane loju di ene asuri buge ta loju gwe seki ene mumbad pa sang sa loju zi yinawa sajane rangi la loju gwe sajane ta kari chungduwa sotarna ただ、 나와지 가르쳐
So earlier I forgot one more point. So His Holiness was saying that this is the pattern of the understanding of the path and the basic nature of reality and how they correlate to the attainment of the final result of the state of Buddhahood that we find presented in the key classics of the Sanskrit Buddhist tradition. So to continue with Chandrakirti's words, Chandrakirti, just before when he talks about the union of the two truths and the understanding, the union of the method and the wisdom aspect of the path leading to the attainment of the union of two Buddha bodies, earlier Chandrakirti talks about how through the light rays of the wisdom of emptiness, one will be able to, through the light rays of the wisdom of emptiness, one will be able to remove all the defilements, and also one will be able to perceive the unity of the oneness of the ultimate nature of reality of all phenomena, and he says that at that point, when you have a direct experience of emptiness, when there is the union of that realization with the method aspect of the path, then one attains.
Now time for sleep.
Then you will be able to have an understanding of the nature of reality where, so far as the ultimate nature of reality is concerned, you feel as if you are able to see the ultimate nature of reality of all phenomena as if you have something in the very palm of your hands. And so what we find here is that when the wisdom of realizing emptiness has reached its kind of highest level, at that point there is a kind of a convergence of the realization of the ultimate nature of all phenomena, as if all the various tastes have merged into a single taste. So in that state, the world of diversity, the world of differentiation, the world of multiplicity, each of these on the conventional level, you know, retain their own identity, their own characteristics, their own causal relationships and so on. All of, on the level of conventional reality, you know, there is this world of diversity where each and every phenomena has its own characteristics, has its own causal relations, has its own identity and so on. But at the level of the direct realization of emptiness, all of these merge into a single taste. All of these merged into a single unity. And where, you know, Chantakriti refers to this as recognizing the ultimate nature to be unborn. So you will really recognize them and these to be dreamlike, illusion-like. And on this basis, you will be able to then lead to the cessations and so on. So Chantakriti talks about the impact or imprint of the understanding of emptiness. Then he then goes on to say that once you have that kind of deeper level of experience of emptiness, one will then, in fact, increase, enhance one's experience of compassion. Because when you then view the sentient beings, you will view the sentient beings in a new light, where you are fully aware of the tragic nature of the situation of the sentient beings, who, although what they basically aspire to is happiness and wish to overcome suffering, but they are constantly acting in a contrary way by clinging on to a substantial reality of a self where there is no such self, and they are on the basis of that sense of self, I am, the thought that I am, there is a strong clinging to this individuality and the substantial reality of the self, and granted upon that, individuals live their life according to the kind of, you know, the dictates of self-cherishment. So by clinging on tightly to the self-grasping and self-cherishment, one then lives a life where there is a total kind of, you know, control of their way of being by these two forces. So when you come to realize that sentient beings live their life according to such mode of being, and then you know that this is totally contrary to the very basic wish that they have, which is to seek happiness and overcome suffering. And that kind of realization will bring an added force to your compassion, because of your realization of emptiness, you have come to the knowledge that there is a way out, there is a possibility of freedom. Because otherwise, generally, if it is a question of seeing sentient beings suffer, but if you do not know that there is a possibility of a freedom or an end to that suffering, then the only response you will feel is a sort of a pity, you know, and just recognize the tragedy. But if your compassion is accompanied by the knowledge that there is a possibility of freedom, then of course this will bring an added dimension of force to your compassion. So Chantakriti explains how, in the light of a direct realization of emptiness, one's compassion for other sentient beings will increase exponentially, and through this way, the method aspect of the path and wisdom aspect of the path will be united.
Yeah.
So what we come to understand is that in this system of practice, the key really is the cultivation of the awakening mind, our bodhicitta, the mind that aspires to attain Buddhahood for the benefit of all beings.
Which is the
key subject matter of Shantideva's text.
That's 신의 룰은 내가 상동의 유문 나무로 좀 시전에 통을 신의 자자 대안은 지대 차범의 동경의 룹 시전에 다 되기 에 당 유문 뽕에 에 뭐지 니부디 시럽을 치고 얼마 더 터부 치고 말해.
So the actual the antidote to eliminating afflictions is really not the method aspect of the path, it is the wisdom aspect of the path. For example, Dharmakirti states in his Pramanavartika, Exposition of Valid Cognition, because thoughts such as emotions such as loving kindness and compassion, because they are not diametrically opposed to the ignorance, therefore they are not the eradicating antidotes. For example, in Chantakirti's clear words, Prashnapada, which is a commentary on Nagarjuna's fundamental wisdom of the middle way, Chantakirti makes distinction between the power of different kinds of antidotes. For example, he lists the antidotes of hatred, specific antidotes of hatred, attachment, and pride or arrogance and jealousy. And each of these different emotions, afflictive emotions, have their corresponding specific antidotes. So, for example, in the case of hatred and hostility, the antidote is loving kindness, the cultivation of loving kindness with relation to desire or attachment and lust. It's the meditation on the impurity of the body and so on. So these are specific antidotes that are presented with relation to specific afflictions. So Chantakirti says that if you examine these kind of specific antidotes corresponding to specific afflictions, although these are, first of all, they are in some sense antidotes that would decrease the intensity of these afflictions. So in a sense, they are temporary suppressing antidotes. And secondly, they, you know, antidote that is effective with relation to one affliction. Say, for example, loving kindness is effective against hatred and anger, but that practice of loving kindness is not effective against attachment and lust and so on. And in some cases, loving kindness practice can be seen as supporting attachment. Similarly, in the case of meditation on the impurity of the body, that is a specific antidote against attachment and lust, but that practice cannot be an effective antidote against hostility and hatred, because in some cases, in fact, a meditation on impurity of body can provide a basis for more hostility and anger and so on, frustrations and so on. So, whereas the antidote against delusion, ignorance, which is the wisdom of emptiness, is not only an antidote that is specific, you know, antidote that brings about the decrease in the intensity of delusion, but also it is an antidote that can root out the delusion. And furthermore, and because all afflictions are rooted ultimately in ignorance and distorted view of reality, therefore the antidote against ignorance and delusion can also help root out all the other afflictions which are based upon them. So Chantakirti makes these distinctions between the specific types of antidotes. So then it is the wisdom realizing emptiness that is the actual antidote against the afflictions and particularly the delusion. Then the question is simple knowledge of emptiness adequate? Is simply having an insight, a cognition of emptiness is adequate? And this is not the case. What is required is a direct realization of emptiness. So it is the direct realization of emptiness that really directly counteracts the afflictions and then begins the process of eradicating them, rooting them out, beginning with the intellectually acquired afflictions and then so on. Therefore, it is not simply because when we speak of understanding of emptiness or realization of emptiness, there can be different levels. An understanding derived through learning is the first stage of understanding. Then understanding derived through reflection, which is the second stage. And understanding derived through meditation or meditative practice. So, therefore, this direct realization of emptiness must be preceded by attainment of penetrative insight or vipassana focused upon emptiness. Therefore, in the text here, it says that the penetrative insight joined with karma abiding utterly eradicates afflicted states. Knowing this, first search for karma abiding, found by those who joyfully renounce the world. So, generally speaking, the suggestion is not that in order to attain realization of emptiness, you need shamatha or karma abiding, but in order to attain penetrative insight focused on emptiness, vipassana focused on emptiness, then for that purpose you need shamatha that is focused on emptiness, the karma abiding that is focused on emptiness first.
当然，这心念当中，啊，的，可是我这个执着的，当然，他们往的这边，也能心念当中执着的送给伢的。当然，阿拉没这么没一百万的钱呢，要到什么才用啊？So
the presentation of the various methods and the steps for cultivating karma abiding, shamatha, and penetrative insight vipassana that we find here is that which is common to the sutra, a perfection vehicle, and the Vajrayana, the tantric vehicle. However, in the context of highest yoga tantra, there is a unique approach. But what we are concerned here is the common approach. And the difference between the two arises because the level of consciousness that is employed, whether the mind that is being employed is on the level of grosser level, or whether the mind that is being employed in the cultivation is a subtle state of consciousness, that's where the differences arise.
So, 当然的，对，浪动托巴利亚，新的托巴，哎，我们中国的卡列斯人呢，浪动时代的，所属多个西路的，这呢，这都比日新疆的台湾，特别有的，那浪动托巴西个了。 加上个，这都比日新疆个台湾，特别是云南啦、长沙的云南啦，哎，你交通个多的，哎，日新疆个台湾，特别是台湾特别什么几个，各个样的嘛，到，真正的交通个，还是交通个多的，日新疆个台湾，都是卡个意思的。所以交通个多的，日新疆台湾这边都来了多，三个人来了，你看他们现在，看了怎样卡过去。
这里面就是那些，你把这些人都透过过来，但早些新的的行动的，其他什么的，三界的去哪了嘞？新的行动送过来了，的目的为什么拿了嘞？新的行动太阳过来嘞？但是，啊，的分米太过，仓位太过，对，都是啷个设备过来呀？分米太过，仓位太过，年底个太过，然后三界个太过。
长期是没太过深，什么多啊？太过那么着蒙古什么多啊？实际上，他太过那了，那现在汤多用个没新的，没个就问太阳过，但没个就问，其他的太阳过来。当长白太过那了了呀，西拉尼太阳过来了。第一汤多的，西拉个那把经济，但汤多是啥样？印度在内，真的得了，看到，看到大米汤的，汤多麻的，真的没印度在内，一点没汤多塞的。
Since penetrative insight is defined as a state of mind where the individual has attained physical and mental pliancy that is derived through the force of analysis, therefore the attainment of penetrative insight, vipassana, must be preceded by attainment of shamatha, karma abiding, because in karma abiding, the mental and physical pliancy that is attained is drawn forth by mental absorption, meditative absorption. And generally speaking, the physical and the mental pliancy attained through the force of mental absorption is easier than through an analytic process. Therefore, the attainment of shamatha, the kama abiding, must precede. And on the basis of a kama abiding, one will then be able to attain physical and mental pliancy drawn forth through the force of analysis. So generally speaking, as far as the techniques and methods for cultivating calm abiding and penetrative insights are concerned, this is something that is a common currency, common to both Buddhist and non-Buddhist spiritual traditions in India. For example, in Langa Avatara Sutra, Descent into Langa Sutra, there are references to the various types of vehicles, yanas. The Langa Avatara Sutra speaks of the human and the celestial beings' vehicles. It speaks about the vehicles of the Brahma. It speaks of the vehicles of the disciples, the Shravakas, the self-enlightened beings, and the Bodhisattva vehicles. So on the level of the first vehicle, which is the human and the godly vehicles or celestial beings' vehicles, the key framework of spiritual practice is the ethical discipline of avoidance from 10 negative actions. But in the the cultivation of faith as the basis of spiritual practice, and in the what is referred to as the Brahma, vehicles of the Brahma, and we also find discussions of shamatha, the kama abiding, practices of kama abiding, and vipassana, the penetrative insight, where the penetrative insight involves comparative analysis of the characteristics of desire realm and the higher realms of existence. And on that basis, one cultivates penetrative insight. So what this suggests is the actual practice and the methods of cultivating shamatha, the kama abiding, and vipassana, the penetrative insights are concerned, these are common to both Buddhist and non-Buddhist spiritual traditions in India. And so, and therefore, we can speak of worldly penetrative insight and trans-worldly penetrative insight. So what we are concerned with here is the trans-worldly penetrative insight or vipassana.
Oh yeah. 但是呢, 主要了呀, 哎呢, 当然的, 进入脑络了呀, 把心的, 主主观, mix, 但是后来的前面呢, 哎呢,熊下来的时候, 年前, 人家那么就的确有, 公认的, 拿了心的主张的三个下来, 啊,的确出, 公认的的,刚才说的, 진주 자체샤나 야구르스도와 신의도주대 자체샤되기요 다음 신의 도단 다 두두시베이나 다 실한이부디 미국에 개발지마 말해 동인 미국 신의 예발에 진입을 미국 상동 예발에 미국에 개발지마 말해 다 이내 미국당 개발에 직디 잡아매지마 제 직도 지드신이 미국 가인에 달래야 아니 로산에 저대야 직 조금 직 직디 지드신이 된 가인에 달래야 소소도 싫어고 쟤네 다 공단 직 니어래 자자가 검래야 재검 조금 니세 대신도 검래야 반대 장바검 인지검수 레바이나 로티 대응올 검제 가서 우리 답에게 최대응올 기획관에 검야 직 미다보검 다음에 검수답나 이제 검색을 놓고 미다보는 시 이인벌에 다음에 보는 시 이인벌에 다 안 돼도 검사를 가르치려면 로티 미다보다 다음에 봐도 진단을 유도치네 미다보래 사바 다음에 봐 이인 사바 로티 진단을 유도치네 다 검야 시행하래 다 전에야 디디야와 치아래 디디야 시아래 계시모도 와판에 유리야 지금 미유사로 지 아니 가서 우리 편에 순유사로 진단의 유사로 아 되네 아니 신유사로 다 유근남다 먹고 싶으시다
So in the Shantideva's text itself, although this is a chapter on meditative concentration, but he does not present the actual practices of cultivating shamatha, calm abiding. So that the actual practice itself of shamatha is not found. Therefore, normally when I present teachings on this particular chapter, I supplement it from other sources, primarily Kamalashila's Bhavana Krama, stages of meditation, where there are very explicit presentation of the stages of the practice of cultivating calm abiding. So if so to explain this very briefly, generally when we speak of calm abiding and penetrative insight, these two practices are not differentiated on the basis of their object of meditation, because just as one can have calm abiding focused upon emptiness, so can there be penetrative insight focused on emptiness, just as there can be calm abiding focused on a conventional reality object. Similarly, there can be penetrative insight focused upon a conventional reality. So what differentiates between these two primary practices is the way in which one engages with the object of meditation. In the calm abiding practice, the manner in which the mind engages with the object is not by means of analysis, but rather a means of settling the mind and single-pointedness of the focus, and maintaining one's mind with a stillness on the chosen object of meditation. So the approach is that of a stilling the mind or absorption onto a chosen object, whereas in penetrative insight, the approach is that of an application of the discriminative awareness. So there is an element of critical analysis that is involved. So these two practices are differentiated by the manner in which the mind engages with the object. So, and therefore, and generally when we speak of meditative practice, we need to distinguish between two forms of meditation. You have the more placement, single-pointed, absorptive type of meditation, where the single-pointedness and the stillness of the mind is the key. And then you can have analytic meditation, where the analysis and the discrimination is a key element. So there are two primary forms of meditation. And similarly, we need to be able to differentiate between different types of meditation. For example, when we say meditate on love or meditate on compassion, here what we are trying to do is to cultivate our mind, where we don't take love and compassion as an object of meditation, but rather we are trying to cultivate our mind into the nature of these emotions, so that we are trying to cultivate these emotions within ourselves. In contrast, when we speak of meditation on impermanence or meditation on no self, here the meditation is done in the form of taking something as an object. So here, taking impermanence as an object of your meditation and reflecting upon it. So therefore, when we speak about meditation, we need to have a certain degree of discernment of the different types of meditation. And also when we speak of the object of meditation or object of mind, and there are again different aspects of the object. You can have an appearing object, the mind that perceives what is perceived. You can have an object of apprehension, what is cognized and understood. You can have, so there are, when we speak of the object of mind, it's not a simple kind of unidimensional thing. You know, one needs to have this discernment of the different dimensions of the object. Similarly, you can also have a meditation in the form of aspiration, a prayer, where you aspire meditation. You can also have a meditation where the primary mode is that of a kind of a sense of conviction. Similarly, you can also have
conviction. Conviction.
So you have the first type of, one type of meditation where there is the object of meditation is becomes an object of aspiration. So you meditate upon that in the form of aspiring to attain that state or a quality. Another type of meditation is in the form of an imagination. Although we do not possess these states right now, but you meditate upon it as if we do, so for specific purpose. For example, as a remedy against a lust, meditators cultivate the vision of the entire space being filled with skeletons. So there you imagine as if skeletons are everywhere. Similarly, you can also have a meditation where there are you simulate qualities of the Buddha. So although you do not possess them, but you simulate these qualities, and that is another form of meditation. So there are different types of meditation. So when we use the term meditation, we should not get the impression it's just a matter of simply closing your eyes and emptying your thoughts. In fact, if that's a meditation, then the rabbits and the pigeons, they are very good at it. So that is in fact not a meditation in the strict sense. It's more of a relaxation. In fact, when you are in meditation, what you are trying to do is to maintain a very alert and clear state of mind. So certainly relaxation is not the case here.
Those
So in the Buddha's own scriptures, we find discussions of various types of objects, possible objects for meditation on calm abiding. For example, he talks about the possibility of using anything for as a focus of one's meditation. He calls that the pervasive object, because you can find the object anywhere and everywhere. And then he then talks about what is called the object that is that pertains to the purification of one's own experience habits. And here what he is talking about is the idea that due to greater or lesser habituation in the past life and also in this life to various types of afflictions and mental and emotional states, some people may have a greater propensity towards attachment, some a greater propensity towards anger and hostility, some towards jealousy, and some towards kind of a proliferation of ideas and thoughts. It's just too much conceptuality. So with relation to these habitual tendencies and individual kind of personality types, Buddha recommends different types of object of meditation for calm abiding. For example, those who have a greater propensity towards anger and hostility, the meditation on loving kindness, taking loving kindness as the focus of calming the mind, is more effective. And those who have greater propensity towards lust and attachment and desire, then meditation on the impurity and imperfections of the human body is thought to be more effective. Those who have greater propensity towards pride and conceit, then meditation on the enumerations of the various classifications of Abhidharma are recommended as a as an antidote against pride and conceit. And of course, in today's world, you can use diversity of the modern subjects and reflect upon them as an antidote against pride and conceit. For example, in my own case, if I have any inkling of a arising of pride or conceit, I just have to think about mathematics. And then also with relation to these objects, Buddha refers to them as objects pertaining to the purification of afflictions. However, the meditation on breathing is thought to be the most effective method for those who are prone towards having proliferation of thoughts, emotions and concepts and so on, where there is too much internal kind of thought processes going on that, you know, constantly distract us. So for that, meditation on breathing, using respiration, breathing as the object of meditation, is said to be the most effective. And here, Asanga's text, Shravaga Bhumi, Levels of the Disciple, has one of the most extensive explanation of this practice, and where he explains how you can do this through different ways. For example, one of the practices he recommends is to count your breath. So you count inhalation as one and exhalation as one, and then you count them up to 10 or up to 15, and then you repeat the counting again. Or another method would be to count. So you count up to 10, and then you count from backwards, from 10 to 1. And another method is to treat both the cycle of inhalation and exhalation as one round, and then count from 1 to 10, and then from backwards, from 10 to 1, and then repeat that process. And one of the advantage of breathing meditation is because unlike other meditation, in breathing meditation, you are not taking any specific object as a content of your thought with a certain image in your mind. Rather, you are focusing your mind upon a bodily activity that you very naturally and normally do. And because of this combination of a natural rhythm of the body that occurs naturally, and you're focusing your mind on that, it has a natural consequence of gradually relaxing your mind and preventing your distraction to all sorts of proliferation of thoughts and concepts and ideas and emotions and so on. So in some sense, the breathing meditation can also lead to a degree of relaxation as well, because your mind is then prevented from being swept away by all kind of plethora of thoughts and distractive thoughts and so on.
tami yose migo chik se tamni ta degana lo lhani jokar.
One can also cultivate tranquil abiding or calm abiding focused on taking one's own mind as the object. And here, first of all, one needs to find a way of bringing to an end the process of following after our sensory experiences. So one needs to reduce the level of activity of the sensory experiences, and then having done that, within the mental world, we have to find a way of So on the mental level, one needs to find a way of preventing our thoughts and mind, being distracted by past memories, recollections of past experience, and so on, and also anticipations of future events. So one needs to find a way of preventing one's mind being kind of directed by or distracted by past experiences, past memories, and so on, or anticipations, thoughts that are projecting into the future. So once you have therefore kind of brought to an end the activity of the senses, brought to an end distraction towards past memories and recollections and future, kind of visions, hopes, and fears, and so on, then you will get to a point where you will simply be experiencing a state of a kind of a non-conceptuality, a state of non-distraction and non-conceptuality. And as you become familiar with that experience, then you might experience a sense of absence. And so at that time, you're beginning to get an experiential sense of what characterizes the essential nature of experience itself. Generally, when we talk about consciousness, we are all, aware of the conscious experiences that we possess, and consciousness is manifest to us. But generally, our consciousness takes the form of whatever objects it is focused on, whether it is external objects of the sensory field, or whether it is internal experiences of one kind or another. So generally, although we experience consciousness, but it always is experienced in the form of the content that the consciousness has. So what is being cultivated here is the experience of consciousness itself, free of that kind of coloring of external or internal experiences. And when you have that degree of experiences, then you take that as the focus of your mind, and then cultivate like a single pointedness and the stillness of your mind on that. And this is a meditation or calm abiding on the mind. Similarly, one can cultivate calm abiding focused on emptiness. So again here, first one needs to cultivate the understanding of emptiness, which would culminate in the realization that all phenomena are devoid of intrinsic reality. So once you have gained that realization of this mere absence of the intrinsic existence of everything, that mere absence you take as an object, and while your ascertainment of that absence is poignant and has a vitality, you take that as the that content of that understanding as the object, and then cultivate a single pointedness and calm abiding. So this is a calm abiding focused on emptiness. So there are different practices, but the most, perhaps the most easy practice of calm abiding is to simply choose a single object, such as in the case of Buddhist practitioners, you can choose the Buddha Rupa, the statue of the Buddha, image of the Buddha, as your object of meditation. And for Christian practitioners, you can take either the cross or Mary, Virgin Mary, or a symbol that has a deep spiritual significance to you. You take that image as the focus of your meditation and cultivate the stillness of your mind, maintaining full focus and total stillness and focus fused with that object. And this is, in a sense, in some ways, probably the most easiest form of cultivating calm abiding.
담미겐 가이네 들이야 신 떼베 그들이야 신 떼네 아니 챔베 쓴데고 그래 미겐 맞으시네 다 챔베 미겐디 제소나 아니 챔베 냠두고요 다 챔베 미겐 셔 다리 마셔 지베 챔베 쓴데고도 와 다 들이야 아니 지 챔베 다 챔베 야우스 바스카소리 심대야지 대중은 잡아 토리 내주시구나 아니 시신 가지다 이거 영향을 시신 영향이 두쪽으로 지기 잡아들이셔 자다 전배 믿긴 심제 되네 다 대강이야 심다 샤지도 전에 심 내지도 전에 심디 믿고 대강라 내버지 구구라라 내버도도 마세베 믿고 대강 로디베 하장급에 충동이 되겠지 로지구요를 마도 미디엄 마셔 쌈리 미디엄 마셔 쌈 중는 심파직 녀대 대회인에 지금 집을 삼나 뒤 논주인 버리 다다가다 미디엄 마셔 시대 미디엄 셀 침부를 찍다 간다 하고를 로디를 침부시제 그다 간다베 지가서 로 로 중독에 대한 디 캐심사인데 자다 대례야 바로 중요한데 침어도 거반이기
지저 인데르베다 친구디 시신기 리버체 친구 중에 내가 그 시신기 리버체 봐서도 마세베 거로야 검제 중나 친구 중마중 친구 마중 거네 다 친구 영아 삼베 지 년가로 또 돼야지 시신들이 중나 시신 짱 붙여야 그래 아 인데르베다 시신기 거네 친구니 리버체 다 친구니 리니 다 년분 두 세바사데 가르슬나 아니 그봐, 근데 윤두산에 다 심팡 토착의 경이 말이야. 근데 윤두 심도 팡 맞다. 아, 다 친구용이야. 심팡 맞잖아. 심두잖아. 아니 팡 맞착의 경이 말이야. 두두야 심도스 야 친구 세야라 심도스 팡 토르다. 어디 도시에니? 친구기냐 못된다. 근데 이 말이야.
So in the actual practice of calm abiding, several factors are crucial, one of which is the ability to direct your mind on the chosen object of meditation. So here what is required is ability to focus upon a chosen object. In addition, one needs a faculty of mindfulness that would ensure that your focus is not lost. So the mindfulness is the factor that enables you to continually maintain that focus on the object. So it's this ability to continue to retain your single-pointedness. So it's the function of mindfulness that will enable you one to do that. So, and when you have mindfulness, then the other factor, which is discerning awareness, sometimes translated as introspective awareness, this will naturally arise. So what you require is not only an ability to focus your attention, but also an ability to sustain that attention through the application of mindfulness. And in addition, also you need discerning awareness to ensure that the mindfulness of the object, attention is not lost, because attention will because the obstacles to the sustained attention can be mental scattering of the mind in general, and particularly mental excitation. And mental excitation is actually a derivative of attachment. So generally when objects of desirable objects, kind of qualities arise and distract your mind, then mental excitation arises. And similarly, mental laxity is another obstacle. And this arises when the level of your mind is, the state of your mind is too low. And it is the role of discerning awareness to be vigilant and to judge whether mental sinking or mental laxity is arising, or whether mental excitation is arising. And particularly with relation to mental laxity, the ability to maintain one's mindfulness alone is not adequate. Sometimes you can have experienced a state where your focus is sustained, but there is a kind of a certain lack of vitality to your experience, that there is no alertness. Although your mind is not distracted, it is focused, but there is no sharpness, there is no alertness. And this is an indication that your mind is beginning to slide into mental laxity. So it's the role of discerning awareness to determine whether or not these two primary obstacles are arising. And a more advanced form of discerning awareness will be such laxity and mental excitation as arises. It will sense, when they're about to arise. So, and when these obstacles do arise, then one needs to apply the appropriate antidote. So if you determine that a mental excitation has arisen, because excitation arises when your mind is too uplifted, then you need to find a way of bringing the state of your mind to a slightly more subdued level. Similarly, if you find mental laxity occurring, then this is due to the level, the state of your mind being too low, and then in terms of energy. Here, then you need to find a way of uplifting the state of your mind. So it is by determining what kind of obstacles are arising, one needs to apply the appropriate remedies, and through this way, one cultivates calm abiding.
응냐. 다 대대비 쓰기 아니 신의 미국 정당 캐고 죽나 엔다 림베림베기 다 쌤네 좀 구식도 와 쌤 줘봐 균도 줘봐 렌드 줘봐 다 다만 미국인간 쌤도 샤 줘봐 다 되네 균 트야 배수셔 Das kama kasher dinle tabo kemi için ne kıyacı o se. Da dinle tüzü manga de mi den kalte ya çok çok pa mi den kalne sen bak çöde ya da dinle de ya su sen su lendi lendi çaya. Da dinle mi den kalte be ne ya çingü gen çingü rapa da gemi ne da çingü çaya ya çi gen de ya de ya ya ko ne bu ding 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 ki çen. Doğuz çene da doğuz çıbı şiur çıbı nabı şiur çıbı. Kayın zeydu çabı ina. 냐원 저거 왜 저는 어디 간다니 숨네 굳이 이 메다도 봐니 그 냠냠 게임 그래 되네 쉬고 이니 다 미딩 간라 미버 로도서 샤네 다 도마 저로 더 세세 인다 네 미딩 간이야 다 진급 게임에 맞는 게다 튕 그제 이네 다 띵에 타원 지금 인산베 타마 저시지 엔드네 미딩 간도 샤네 무슨 내 개발스맨다 나 되네 So,
as you engage in the practice by applying these various factors such as mindfulness, attention, focusing the attention, discerning awareness, and so on, then you will be able to go through a gradual, progressively a more stable states of mind. So in terms of the actual experience of the different stages of the development, in the text one speaks of 9 stages of mental development, and beginning from simple placement, which is the first level, and then close then continual placement, and then sequential placements, and so on. So what this indicates is that at the initial stage, the ability to simply maintain one's attention focused on a chosen object is the key objective. Then as you cultivate this, you will reach a point where you may be able to retain the mind and you know somehow ensure a degree of continuity, a continuum where your focus is maintained. So this is the continual placement, and then at a later point you will reach a point where although in your meditation session you constantly come in and out, but at the same time you are able to bring your mind back to the object of meditation, which may last for a few minutes at a time, and then your mind gets distracted, but then you gradually, gently bring it back, and then maintain that focus mindfully for another couple of minutes, and so on. So progressively, your ability to maintain the focus without distraction and without sliding into mental excitation and laxity will increase to a point on the eighth stage. According to the text, you will reach a point where, when you enter the meditation session, initially you will require an effort, a deliberate effort, and as a result of that effort, once you enter into the meditation, then you will be able to maintain the focus, sustained attention for a long period of time, and eventually, and this experience will culminate to a point where, the moment you place your mind to the chosen object of meditation, the mind naturally remains still and focused. So then at that point, your single-pointedness has become effortless. There's a quality of effortlessness. And so at that point, a true attainment of shamatha, kama abiding, is characterized by an ability to focus one's mind on the chosen object, undistracted, for 1/6 of a day, which is 4 hours in one stretch, and so that kind of single-pointedness of mind, when it is accompanied by pliancy, physical and mental pliancy, and particularly a single-pointedness is derived from a blissful experience generated by this suppleness and the pliancy of mind and body, then at that point one has attained true kama abiding shamatha. Some of my colleagues, I don't know whether they are able to maintain their focus for 1 6. It seems that some of them have actually maintained quite a high level of this realization, that where they're able to sustain their focus and attention undistracted for quite a prolonged period of time, and during which they observe that there is naturally an impact upon even the pace of your breathing. There's a kind of a relaxation that occurs naturally, even in your natural rhythm of breathing as well. However, the method of, or the practice of cultivating kama abiding within the context of a deity yoga meditation, it probably is more easy. So in order to successfully cultivate triangular abiding or kama abiding and shamatha, vipassana, the penetrative insight, one needs to accumulate the conditions, the necessary conditions for a successful practice of these. And so the key is to find a way of dealing with the obstacles that hamper or that hinder the attainment of these qualities. So particularly those that distract your mind, and also such as mental excitations and so on, and many of which occur primarily with relation to desirable objects, objects of sensual experiences. Therefore, for such a practitioner, it becomes important to deal with these obstacles. And in the text here, we read...
knowing
this, the first search for calm abiding found by those who joyfully renounce the world. So here the indication is that a practitioner of calm abiding must create the conditions which would involve dealing with obstacles such as distractions and excitation, and particularly relation to the objects of sensual desire. So
in verse stanza 5, we read, beings brief, ephemeral, who fiercely cling to what is also passing, will catch no glimpse of happiness for many thousands of their future lives. Although here the reflection on impermanence is done in the context of dealing with objects of attachment, but this particular stanza is also very helpful. We can apply it many other contexts, particularly for practitioners of bodhicitta, the awakening mind, because normally when our relation to other sentient beings is so influenced and dictated by discriminating emotions of attachment and hostility, this Shantideva's passage, that beings brief and ephemeral who fiercely cling to what is also passing, can be applied in that context as well. So we can use this reflection, for example, if we find ourselves caught very strongly by discriminating emotions of attachment and hostility to others, then we can and do the meditation that, what is the point of me who is ephemeral, impermanent, making such discriminations with regard to beings who are equally ephemeral and impermanent. Similarly, you can apply this in the context of hostility. What is the point of me who is brief and impermanent, be so hostile and angry towards beings who are equally brief and ephemeral? So you can apply this reflection in many practices. Similarly, so here the meaning of impermanence can be understood in a kind of a grosser level of being things coming into being and things coming to cease. Or you can also reflect upon the subtle impermanence of how each of us oneself and other sentient beings are impermanent in the sense that we are other-powered. We are under the power of afflictions, ignorance, and so on. So one can reflect upon that. One can also use this meditation and substitute impermanence with suffering. So beings who are subject to dukkha, just like myself, what is the point of drawing such discriminations against beings who are equally subject to dukkha and suffering? So one can do this meditation in reflection in many other contexts as well. So this particular passage is very powerful. So we now read from stanza 6 onwards, and I'm not going to take the time of explaining word by word and stanza by stanza. So here Shantideva goes on to explain the methods of dealing with objects of distraction, particularly those desirable objects that tend to distract us and become obstacles for cultivating single-pointedness of mind. And so we read particularly in stanza 9, there's a reference to interaction with what Shantideva refers to as the childish people. And generally the term chipa or the childish, one can speak about childishness in terms of maturity of age. One can speak of childishness in terms of comparison to the Arya noble beings who have attained direct insight into the truth, or childishness in terms of people who are not prudent, and in contrast to those who are wise and prudent. So here, the meaning of the term childishness really refers to ordinary people whose perspectives are totally contrary to the Arya beings who have gained insight into the truth. So therefore Shantideva writes, For if I act like those who are childish, sure it is that I shall fall to lower states. So why keep company with the childish and go with them in ways so far from virtue?
So what Shantideva is suggesting here is that the ordinary beings, the childish, the so-called childish, their perspective is very short-term. They're short-sighted. They're only interested in the short-term happiness and interest. Whereas the noble one, the Arya beings, their perspective is that of a long-term. And what they aspire for is a long-term happiness. So from the point of view of that kind of long-term happiness, the activity and the behavior and the manner of action and behavior of the ordinary beings are really like childish. And therefore, such ordinary beings, then Shantideva goes on to explain their characteristics. One moment friends, the next they are bitter enemies. Even pleasant things arouse their discontent. Worldly people, hard it is to please them. And a beneficial word, and they resent it, while all they do is turn me from the good. And if to what they say I close my ears, their anger burns the cause of lower states.
So we're on stanza 12, which reads, jealous of superiors, they vie with equals, haughty towards those below, they strut when praised. Say something untoward, they seethe with rage. What good was ever had from childish folk? So here we spoke about these being the characteristics of an ordinary childish person. But even among this category, there will be those who are more childish than others. So in fact, if you think carefully, generally within the society, the poorer section of the community, those who are really poor, they tend to be less prone to these kind of very fluctuating emotions like competitiveness or jealousy and so on. One could perhaps say that they are less prone to this, whereas although the basic overall outlook may be that of a childish person, but in the world, those who tend to be a bit more successful, whether that success comes from on the basis of an education or greater wealth or fame or status and so on, whatever may be the basis, and those who are bit more successful than, as the Tibetans would say, those, you know, when the feathers grow on you, then the people generally tend to become more proud, more conceited, and so if the basic outlook of that individual is that of the childish, as Shantideva describes, and then he or she faces, you know, gets these kind of successes in the worldly terms, like fame, wealth, position, and so on, which are generally understood to be favorable conditions for one's own sustenance and survival and so on. But sometimes what happens is these become destructive, and then the individual will act towards those who he or she may see as superior out of jealousy, towards those who are equal, competitiveness and rivalry arises, and towards those whom you deem to be inferior to you, then there's a sense of haughtiness, sense of pride and conceit towards these arises. And with these kind of emotions, you constantly live your life. So for example, when your pride is based upon your recognition of respect within the community, on the basis of your knowledge, so people call you great scholar or great professors, and so then you start feeling kind of puffed up. This is how you react, then even a slightest criticism really, you know, makes you angry, because there's a vulnerability. If people praise you, of course, then it further, you know, enhances your pride. So this is how the childish reacts to situations.
So, drumdumbe, that drumdumbe is here. Rengi kundi zukdu kuna yang, ane wadu shule jukut dawan zosaya di mana risha. Di peke jambule, mi chig ya chanjo arusha, mi chig taro danjo kufedu mula, thamur tu ya masa sunga di peke jambule risha.
So what, you know, if you think along these lines deeply, what the great master Drumtempa has said is very true, where he wrote that even though I may be revered by all and placed upon their crowns, may I remain simple and recognize myself as the lowest. And this kind of humility, I think, is very important. Otherwise, there is a real danger of, what the Kadamba masters say, turning the gods into devils or demons. Might actually happen, because generally the various excellent qualities of the human existence are objects of aspiration, whether it is a good birth, with the physical and mental faculty, resources, having knowledge, and all of these are favorable conditions.
And also
great height, big body. So these are favorable conditions. So maybe, but having said that, those who are short, you know, if there is a danger, probably they can fast and run faster.
And easier to hide.
So these are, in general, these are desirable things. These are actually favorable conditions that could help the individual, not only for sustenance, but also for fulfillment of other noble aspirations. For example, with relation to wealth, you could help others, you could share the resources with others, with knowledge, you could help others, and so on. So if these favorable conditions instead of assisting the individual in furthering one's own personal well-being and happiness, but also in improving one's spiritual qualities and helping other sentient beings by using the privilege that one has, if instead these factors become further conditions for greater pride, arrogance, haughtiness, and so on, then truly, you know, what are thought to be favorable conditions, which are supposed to be beneficial, becomes destructive. And this is what the great Kadamba masters mean when they say turning gods into demons.
Lord remember that you have a job and you have a job, you know?